So in Sunday's LA Daily News, of course, it ran in the whole Southern California News Group, Orange County Register as well, Long Beach Press Telegram, etc. Joel Kotkin of Chapman University fame and the author of The Human City, he wrote this very interesting column called Are We Going Fascist? Now, we know that the left have thrown the fascism charge at Donald Trump really since he started his campaign. And there are some similarities besides the Mussolini-like jutted jaw in terms of personality cult, demonization of other groups, and this sort of, it rage against elites. These are kind of classic fascistic arguments and tactics. But what's interesting about Joel Kotkin's piece is that he points a finger in the other direction as well. And rather than me prattle on about it, why don't we have Joel talk about it? It's a pleasure to welcome back
I'll
to the show.
I'll prattle on about it.
Joel Kotkin, welcome aboard, sir. How are you?
Nice to be here. Basically, I mean, what I think is happening is that illiberalism, if we want to use that term in the classic sense of, you know, tolerance, pluralism, is being eroded both ways. In other words, it's being eroded, you know, in the sense from the right by, you know, the rise of Trump, and then certainly there are some things that are not so great about it. But it's also, and probably more profoundly, more institutionally on the left, in the universities, in the media, in Hollywood, where there is sort of this unanimous political view. Everybody believes the same things, thinks the same things, and has the same sort of attitude, which you will find in classic authoritarian movements, where anybody who disagrees with me isn't just wrong, they're bad. And they're stupid, and they're anti-science, or whatever you want to use. And this has become institutionalized to a huge extent now in the universities, in the media, in the upper echelons of bureaucracies, you know, particularly in a place like California. And so that it becomes impossible to have a discussion. So you essentially, you know, are in a weird way repeating the kind of conflicts that you used to have, let's say if you go back to Italy in the 20s or Germany in the 30s, where you almost have weaponized groups who have nothing to say to each other and are inevitably going to fight. My concern is, how do we go back to some sort of civility and, you know, some sort of modesty in our politics? Because I think that we've sort of weaponized our politics in a way that it is not very congruent with a democratic society.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. And it's a complex issue because this battle is taking place on many, many fronts. And I'm going to try to separate some of them out. And I'm sure there's 100 more than I'm going to talk about. But first and foremost, I have always believed from the moment he started running that Donald Trump has fascistic tendencies. Although I'm not even sure he's aware of it. I don't know that Trump is steeped in political philosophy to identify his own fascistic tendencies. But
right.
The ones that you identify are classic fascistic tactics. Now, that doesn't mean that he's going to have people have jumped the shark and they've got him as another Hitler, which to me is demeaning to the meaning of evil, because I don't believe that Donald Trump is going to have internment camps and extermination camps, et cetera, et cetera.
No.
And I don't believe that he wants to invade the Sudetenland or any other land for that matter. So it's really a historically dangerous hyperbole to engage in that kind of rhetoric. But in terms of operational tactics, he does employ the same kind of fascistic strategies for waging campaigns and advancing agendas. Even this battle with our intelligence services right now, he dismisses any accusation that the Russians may have hacked into the election process by stealing emails and releasing them in order to aid Trump's win by saying, oh, those are the same people who said that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction,
right,
as if that's a rebuttal.
Right. I think that what we're seeing is, you know, very unfortunate circumstances, which we've had all along, between what I think were two authoritarian personalities. you know, Hillary Clinton, one form of authoritarian personality, and Trump, another. The difficulty and the danger with Trump is he's kind of untethered and you know, sort of doesn't play, you know, isn't necessarily going to play the game even within certain rules. But on the other hand, you know, Clinton would have brought us 4 more years of rule by decree, you know, executive orders. You know, you would have started to see the pressure to, you know, anybody who disagrees, let's say, on climate change.
Right, you know, be criminally prosecuted in some cases. And your point about, and this is the great incongruity, is that the so-called progressives on college campuses in particular, but not exclusively on college campuses, have become fascistic themselves. And I know that that's an inherent congruity. How can you be a left-wing fascist? But when you look at the totalitarian sort of our way or the highway, and they're eating their own, it's become a circular firing squad. You look at people who go to conferences on white privilege, and even when you agree with them, if you're a white person who agrees on white privilege, you have white privilege to be there. You know, it's you can't make it up.
Also, you know, fundamentally, if you think of the history of fascism, it borrowed very heavily from, you know, a red ideology or, you know, socialist or communist ideology. I mean, you know, people forget Mussolini himself was a socialist. And Hitler did take many things, you know, after it was the National Socialist German Workers' Party. So, you know, there are elements of fascism that come from the right, but also borrow heavily from the left. And I think the difference is that the Democrats have decided that their coalition, which is a coalition of both the sort of oligarchic elites and the bureaucracy and then, you know, the people at the bottom who are dependent on government transfers for their existence. And so, you know, there's the authoritarianness of this, the lack of discussion, for instance, about why it's important that property ownership be dispersed. I don't hear anything about that. The very basis of a republic, the way it was set up, was that lots of people own property. I don't see anyone talking about this. It's, you know, it's one group of resentments against another group of resentments. And, you know, so like to, and as I point out in the piece, for whatever you might say about Trump and how he might have, you know, sort of incited some, you know, negative, you know, racial xenophobic feelings, the people disrupting rallies were on the left.
That's
not
right.
On the right.
That's right. It's for all the talk about violence at Trump rallies, they failed to point out that the violence was not started by the Trump people. There were no incidents with Trump supporters going to Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders rallies and starting fights. The violence was coming from the opposite side. We're talking about Joel Kotkin, at Chapman University, and of course, his book, The Human City, Urbanism for the Rest of Us, is available and always a great read. You asked the important question at the very beginning, and that is, how do we get past this? And I don't know. I don't know how we get past this because we perpetuate it on a personal level through our social media, threads and posts, and it's 24/7, and we carry it with us in our phones. And this is what's new. I mean, we've always had hostility. These campaigns are nothing new in terms of acrimony and reckless accusations. But what is new is the ubiquitous nature of it, that it's we're marinated in it.
Right. And of course, what's happened is, you know, with all this discussion of fake news and all that, I mean, fundamentally, people live in sort of ideological bubbles. They only read certain things. I mean, if you read the New York Times every day and you read and you listen to NPR every day and that's your source of news, you're living on a different planet than the person who's listening, you know, to Rush Limbaugh and Fox News. I mean, there's almost nothing in common. And by the way, this is a very unfortunate pattern that you already see in Europe, which is that newspapers are predominantly ideological. I remember when I was in France, you would read the Le Figaro with conservative paper, Le Monde, the liberal paper, and they about the same story, but it didn't even seem like they were reporting the same things.
Right. Well, this is the old argument that Moynihan made, Daniel Patrick Moynihan. You're entitled to your own opinion. You're not entitled to your own facts. Today we have our own facts. Joel, we'll continue to try to sort it out. Thanks so much for coming on with us. Always appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate the opportunity.
Joel Kotkin.